This is People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, in Portland, Oregon, USA, and online at kboo.fm. My name is Andrew Geller, and today I'm going to come back to an issue that has been briefly addressed once before and is really kind of in the throes of it back in Washington, D.C., and that relates to legislation that will potentially largely govern how the Internet runs in the future. It's not just a U.S. issue, although a lot of these important changes are taking place here in the U.S. potentially. Talking about issues surrounding network neutrality, which is a legal political term and not used widely in actual network engineering, as it relates to how networks operate. And in specific here, we are talking about the Internet. My guest this morning to discuss network neutrality, how it might affect competition in terms of both content providers and Internet service providers, and with an update of what's going on up to the moment with network neutrality in the Senate is Jeanine Kenny. She is a senior policy analyst with Consumers Union, which is the publisher of Consumer Reports magazine. Good morning and welcome to the program, Jeanine.
Good morning and thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. So a lot of people have probably heard the term net neutrality or network neutrality, and I'll use them interchangeably here. Can you give us a general description of the term? Because from everything that I've read, I've gotten a little bit more confused myself.
Well, that's fair, because the issue is confusing, and certainly the opponents of network neutrality have tried to make it even more confusing. But at base, for consumers, it's really pretty simple. The Internet has always functioned in a neutral manner, which is why the term neutrality is used. And that means that the companies that own the pipes over which Internet content and services flow can't control that content. They're merely offering a transmission service. And up until last year, that was really the rule of the road in federal law. Neutrality, in fact, was covered by federal law. And that all changed when the Federal Communications Commission effectively deregulated broadband, giving the large telephone and cable companies who dominate the broadband market the ability to start acting as gatekeepers, you know, the way that they do for other services. For example, cable is a type of a network where the owner of that system gets to control what you see and hear over their network. And the fear is that without strong network neutrality rules on the books, that the Internet will quickly look much more like a cable service, where the gatekeepers, the big telecommunications companies, control what flows over the Internet rather than consumers being able to drive the development of Internet services and content with their own demand.
Now,
I don't know if that clarifies it.
Well, it does. It does in part. You're more addressing the non-discrimination aspect of network neutrality, in that, as you said, the provider of the pipe or the wires, the cables, can't say, well, this is more important, or we don't like this, and so we're going to slow down or speed up this content.
Right.
There's a couple of other aspects that I'm looking at here, and that's the issue of interconnection, where network operators have a duty and a right to interconnect with other network operators. And then there's the issue of access, where the end user, you at your personal computer, can theoretically connect to any other end user, and this is how peer-to-peer file sharing operates.
Right. I mean, those principles are covered under a portion of federal law that used to also cover broadband, and broadband is no longer included under those rules. So, you know, really it's Katie barred the door in terms of what the network owners could do in terms of monkeying with the transmission of information and services. But the primary concern, at least at the moment, is the telephone companies, you know, very publicly stated intentions to create what we think will become a two-tier Internet, whereby those Internet content and service providers who can afford to pay for fast access to you, the consumer, will have that ability, and everyone else you know, smaller companies, the innovators, bloggers, anyone streaming their own video will be on the slow lane. And what that does is, you know, create sites that function very well and some that function very poorly. And the consumer, the end user, won't have any idea why that's happening. And it creates a, it opens a wide window for the network owners to cut preferential deals with service providers that they may have a financial arrangement with, and ultimately, you know, benefit their own products and services at the expense of all the innovation that consumers have come to enjoy over the internet.
Now, there's several factors that are influencing the policy debate in D.C., and we'll get to the actual policy debate in a moment, but I just want to reference some of them, and people may be familiar with some of these to varying extents. There's the issue above about voice over internet, or VoIP, V-O-I-P. That's something I use. I don't have a cell phone, and I use calling cards once in a while, and the calling card companies are basically able to offer, you know, 1 cent per minute phone calls because it's going over the internet. And the phone companies aren't so thrilled about that. There's high bandwidth applications like online multiplayer gaming and increasing popularity of doing a whole lot of video downloading. One thing that's interesting in referencing that is uploading is rarely discussed, and that's a issue. In terms of access speeds, you typically, for broadband folks, you have a much higher rate of download than you do upload, and some people think that that kind of stifles or even prohibits in some circumstances the ability of people to kind of get content out there on their own, which is one of the deals with the internet, is you can put anything you want up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the concern you raise about VoIP is probably one of the most obvious and concrete examples that we can point to as to the potential harm of no network neutrality, because both the phone companies and the cable companies who own those broadband pipes also offer their own phone services. Cable offers a VoIP service in most cases, and obviously the phone companies offer their own wireline service. Once those companies can start charging your VoIP provider for special access or quality of service, they effectively have the ability to price that provider out of the marketplace, or at least make sure that those services are no longer cheaper than your own. So the consumer who's enjoying, you know, $25 a month unlimited calling over their VoIP service may see that come to an end. And, you know, we have seen this behavior by these same companies over just about any network they own, whether it's broadband or otherwise. They always seek to use whatever market power they have to exclude competitors. And VoIP providers are certainly a serious competitor and will be an increasingly strong competitor to phone and cable companies over time. So that may be, you know, the first service you see impaired or impeded. You know, the question of video downloads is another obvious one, because cable obviously offers its own video services, and they're going to be concerned about your ability to get the video products that you want off the internet that competes with their own services. Telephone companies now are trying to get into video service as well, so they will likewise have a vested interest in making sure that whatever video you download either doesn't function properly or costs more than it does now. And these are very serious concerns, because for consumers, your choice of telephone and video providers are pretty limited. You know, in most markets, you have one video service provider, that's cable, and in most markets you have one phone provider. And unfortunately, that's likely to remain the case if we don't have network neutrality regulations that will keep or protect the internet as another potential avenue for competition, which it has demonstrated over the years that it can become.
Now, in August of last year, the Federal Communications Commission adopted a policy statement that touches on many key ideas to the concept of network neutrality, but it's not legislation. It's sort of administrative rule angle. What level of enforcement or relevance does that even have? Because there is legislation moving forward in Congress, which we'll get to in a moment. But what does the FCC policy statement have to do with any of this?
Well, those of us who are looking for strong network neutrality rules would say it doesn't have much to do with network neutrality at all. All those rules, and essentially what FCC did after they deregulated broadband, they adopted basically a policy statement which included four principles, essentially around the concept that consumers have a right to access any information they want on the internet, have a right to use any application or access any services they want. But there are a couple of key problems with that policy statement. One, it's just a policy statement. It is not a regulation. Those statements are very, very vague. And more importantly, nowhere in that policy statement does it mention the principle of non-discrimination, which is what this is all about. And all that means is that the network owner cannot use its network power and ownership to discriminate against content, to give priority to some content over others, to adopt business schemes that may subtly impair your access, although not completely. So while it does, it does in theory prevent overt blocking of consumer access to information and services, it does nothing to prevent these more subtle and more likely forms of discrimination that will reduce consumer choice on the internet and their options for competitive providers of all types of services and information. So that's one of the problems. The enforceability issue is another key problem. When the Federal Communications Commission adopted that policy statement, they made very clear they were not going to take proactive enforcement action. So a company, say your VoIP provider that feels like it's being blocked or impaired, would have to bring an action before the FCC, and what FCC does with that is really up in the air. So what we have been looking for is legislation that would reinstate the principle of non-discrimination in law and provide a meaningful enforcement mechanism to ensure that companies who are being discriminated against by the network owners have speedy redress so that their services aren't blocked and they're not put out of business before action is ever taken. So that's what this is really about, is trying to reinstitute at least some of the rules that were in place since the inception of the Internet. You'll hear this argument from the telephone and cable providers that, gosh, we shouldn't regulate the Internet. Well, the fact is non-discrimination rules have been in place since the inception of the Internet and are responsible for the explosive growth of innovation around the edges of the Internet that we have all enjoyed. So that don't regulate the net is really a boogeyman. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is not regulating content and services. No one wants to do that. What we're talking about is making sure the on-ramps to the Internet remain open and free to any provider of content, services, or applications.
You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. My guest is Janine Kenny. She is a senior policy analyst with Consumers Union, and we're discussing the issue of network neutrality. You can visit them online at www.consumersunion.org. And the People Rise Up page at kboo.fm will link to them as well as other material for you to investigate network neutrality a little further. Now, I know you have to duck out a little early to try and get up onto the Hill, so let's talk about what's going on up there.
There's a lot going on.
There is a lot. Let me do a brief summary of up to the House passage, and then we'll have you talk about what's going on beyond that. Several bills were competing for passage in the House. A bill ultimately did pass on last week, the Communications Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act, sponsored by, I don't see the sponsor here, but there was a competing bill that on the face of it sounded a whole lot better, sponsored by Jim Sensenbrenner and John Conyers, the Internet Freedom and Non-Discrimination Act. That passed handily in the House Judiciary Committee. I guess it's unlikely to be considered by the full House, seeing as the COPE Act, as it's called, passed and is going to the Senate, where there's a bunch of competing bills, none of them exactly like the House bill, and the bills in the Senate are now in various stages of committee hearing.
That's right. I mean, what happened in the House was a major telecommunications bill was passed, and the network neutrality fight became part of that the Sensenbrenner-Conyers bill that you mentioned, which did provide for strong network neutrality, was not even allowed to be considered as an amendment to the COPE Act that you mentioned. And an amendment that would have provided strong network neutrality rules offered by Congressman Markey of Massachusetts failed on the floor by a vote of 152 to 269. And that was really disappointing. So now the fight moves to the Senate, and what is happening in the Senate is it is about to consider in committee also another massive telecommunications bill. And what we're fighting for is to make sure that network neutrality rules become a part of that legislation through amendment. Right now, that bill, S-2686, does not include network neutrality rules. And Senators Dorgan of North Dakota and Senator Olympia Snowe, a Republican from Maine, have introduced legislation that they hope to offer as an amendment to S-2686 that would reinstitute enforceable, strong rules that would keep the Internet free. And so now we're in the press conference I'm about to go to is to launch that campaign in preparation for that committee consideration. And any of your listeners who want to get involved and do something about this can go to savetheinternet.com and take action by sending an email or signing a petition to their senator urging their support for this legislation. The fight is really just beginning in the Senate and will go on for some time. So the loss in the House, though disappointing, doesn't mean the fight is over. And we think, especially if consumers of all stripes weigh in on this, it'll be very hard for Congress to continue to listen and buy into the message of the telecommunications giants and be forced to listen to the views of their own constituents, which, you know, overwhelmingly support strong network neutrality.
Well, and also cut a swath across the entirety of the United States. The coalition that comprises SaveTheInternet.com includes, for example, the Christian Coalition of America, MoveOn.org, the National Religious Broadcasters, the American Library Association, the American Association of Retired Persons, Businesses Galore Online, and then not part of this exact coalition, but forming their own coalition, you got Google, Yahoo, MSN, eBay, Craigslist, and dozens of others, dozens of other really large websites. Now, I assume the issue here is none of these providers of services and applications want to have to pay extra to get the same stuff they're getting to people right now.
Well, I mean, that's right, and I think it goes beyond that. They're accountable to their own consumers, and when they are, when they're hit with bigger fees, they've got to pass those costs on. We know, at Consumers Union, that any time costs go up to a business, the consumer ultimately pays. So here, the consumer would end up paying twice for the same service they were already getting. They're paying for their own access, their own subscription to their broadband, and they're going to be hit with higher fees, either directly or indirectly, from content and service providers, from whom the telephone and cable companies are extorting additional money. It's also really important to point out, and this gets missed in the debate, that anyone who, any business that is offering content or services on the Internet already pays for access to those pipes at the back end. What the phone companies want to do is charge them additional fees for that last mile link to the consumer, and that's what the fight is about. So there's been a lot of misinformation about service providers getting a free ride on the Internet, and they already pay substantially for that access, but they've been paying on a non-discriminatory basis. Everybody pays. What we're trying to avoid is the gatekeepers deciding who are the winners and the losers on the Internet. We believe consumers are best suited to decide what are the best products and services they want and they want to pay for, not the giant telecommunications companies.
So you've referenced cable deregulation previously, broadband deregulation. I imagine that most people listening would not like the idea of having to and only having the opportunity to select internet service providers and the availability of content and applications the way that they are now allowed to select a cable TV provider, in that it's largely one, or a broadband provider. You folks helped put out a report in August 2005, Broadband Reality Check, that shed some interesting light on how the FCC assesses broadband penetration in the U.S. compared to many other countries, as well as what you get for your dollar on a monthly basis. And I was blown away at the extraordinarily slow rate that U.S. broadband providers supply.
Yeah, that's right. Consumers in the U.S. who are paying for what we think of as fast access are paying much more on a per bit basis for slower service compared to just about any other country in the world. And that's in part due to the failure of the companies to invest in these networks. And we don't want to make that situation worse. You hit the nail on the head. Most consumers have at best two choices of broadband providers. In an ideal world, you would have a lot of different competitors to choose from, and that competition would police discriminatory behavior, because if you're dissatisfied with your broadband provider, why, you could just jump to another provider. The reality is, you don't really have that choice in the marketplace, and the report that you referenced that we issued with Free Press and Consumer Federation of America last year, really blew a hole in the myth that consumers have all these options of broadband providers. Every consumer knows that that's not the case. If you're lucky, you have a choice of DSL and cable modem, and that's really about it. And the switching costs, for a consumer who's already getting, say, their phone service, their broadband service, their cell service from the same provider, is not likely to drop that DSL service in favor of cable service, without a lot of thought, because it's an expensive proposition. So that's the problem, is consumers just don't have anywhere else to go, and that's why, we're so concerned, because not only will the broadband network owners have the ability to discriminate, they'll have the incentive as well, and there's not a whole lot the consumer can do about that.
That's Janine Kenny. She's a senior policy analyst with Consumers Union, and you can find out more about what they're doing on network neutrality online at www.consumersunion.org, and you got a press conference to run to, so thank you very much for sticking around this morning.
Thank you, and I would just recommend that your listeners also check out savetheinternet.com. There's lots of information there and a place where they can go to take action.
All right. Thank you very much, Janine.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And not only that, but SaveTheInternet.com has a great newswire dedicated to network neutrality-related news. Looking at it just here, there's a nice big article about what would tiered internet access, and by that, it's just what we were talking about there. You could have different tiers of access for different fees. What would that mean for nonprofit organizations trying to get their outreach materials out? What would it mean for, say, KABU Radio in terms of streaming stuff on the internet and your ability to download this MP3 from archive.org, where I house all these programs? And just in the context of U.S. broadband pricing and speeds versus other countries, in August 2005, when they did this survey, Roadrunner was the service which provided the highest download speed maximum, 5 megabits per second. That's for $45 a month. In comparison, in Japan, for $22 a month, or half the amount you'd pay in the States, you get 26 megabits per second, or over five times as fast. Japanese consumers regularly have broadband connection speeds up to 100 megabits per second, or 20 times as fast as the fastest U.S. provider. And in parts of Japan where folks can subscribe to something called residential fiber wire, they have 1,000 megabits per second. So American broadband providing service pales in comparison to many countries around the world. And if you read Broadband Reality Check, put out by Free Press Consumers Union and the Consumer Federation of America, August 2005, you can find out more about that. We were talking about stuff going on in the Senate. There's a committee hearing, Senate Commerce Committee, on June 22nd to vote on a bill. I don't see if that's the Stevens bill. Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska has a bill in the Senate that seems to have a bunch of support. There's also this bill from Olympia Snow and Byron Dorgan that seems like it would be actually a whole lot better to get passed. And maybe they can attach that as an amendment. We'll just have to see. SaveTheInternet.com. Send an email to the folks in your list. Let them know what's going on, because if you appreciate being able to access the Internet in a non-discriminatory way and not have other folks determining what you should be able to have access to, whether it's independent news, independently produced audio, video, maybe you upload stuff and this would impact you in that way. Let folks know there's a chance to impact this here. SaveTheInternet.com. Hundreds and hundreds of organizations are part of that coalition. There's nearly 1 million people who have signed a petition, and there are about 6,000 blogs that are addressing the issue. So there's no shortage of opportunity to check out information regarding this topic, and I would encourage you to do so. Thank you very much for listening to today's program. If you have questions, comments, or feedback about this or any other of my shows, you can send email to me at kboo@riseup.net. The People Rise Up website at kboo.fm, clickable through the archives section still temporarily, will have links to more information about this topic, as well as the MP3 audio for this program, also available at archive.org's open source audio. Just search for my name, Andrew Geller. And again, thanks for listening. Coming up next, where is it here? There we go. We got an edition of Making Contact. It's been a little while, hasn't it? Today, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer youth facing homelessness, harassment, homophobia, and even violence. Plus, LGBTQs seeking an increasingly difficult path to political asylum in the U.S. Stay tuned for that. Move the Indonesian Gamelan troop out of the way before that gets going. Democracy Now! At 11 o'clock features journalist Dar Jamail discussing the killing of two pregnant... Actually, you know what? That might have been one pregnant Iraqi woman and her sister, if they're talking about an incident about a week ago. And Greg Pallas will be speaking about the disenfranchisement of African-American voters. So stay tuned for that. And coming up now, here is Making Contact.